Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, December the 16th. We will talk about our money this hour and what this week's move by the Federal Reserve Board means to us. The Fed cut a key interest rate on Tuesday by 0.25 percentage point. The reduction in the federal funds rate to 4.25% marks the third rate cut in the past 3 months. And the Fed signaled that further cuts were possible if the crisis in the mortgage lending industry and in the housing market get worse. We will talk about what this move means to you personally and maybe some personal financial money moves that you might want to consider now or put off. And welcome your questions for financial advisor Kevin McKinley. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send your question via email, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Kevin McKinley is a vice president and financial advisor with R.W. Baird in Eau Claire, Robert W. Baird in Eau Claire. He's a member of the Governor's Council on Financial Literacy, author of the book Make Your Kid a Millionaire. And he's also the host of Kevin McKinley on Your Money, which is heard Sunday mornings on the Ideas Network at 7 o'clock in the morning, at least through the end of this month. And Kevin joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for being with us. And let me explain. We did announce earlier this month when Phil Corvo was on my program that Kevin McKinley on Your Money is going on hiatus. We hope it's a short one, but you lost your co-host and other things going on here. So On Your Money, the program that some people might hear Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock, is going to go on hiatus and be replaced at least temporarily with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We hope that you will be back, though.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. I hope so, too. In the meantime, if people can't live without the show, and I'm guessing that's the case in most of the listeners' lives, they can listen to archives of the show on our website at onyourmoney.com.
Mm-hmm.
And all we're hoping for is that Greg and I got tired of the paparazzi stalking us all the time and the life of a Wisconsin public radio celebrity. It was too much for ourselves and our families. We couldn't take it anymore. Hopefully, taking a little break will stem the tide a little bit, and we'll be able to return to some form of normalcy.
Hey, I know how you feel. I know how you feel.
I know. Yeah. Tell me about it.
But if nothing else, Kevin, I certainly hope that you'll come on this program from time to time and talk with our listeners. We already have full lines with people who want to talk with you. But let me just get your general take on all of this off the bat. I know the last time we talked, you mentioned that not only are you a financial advisor, but you have to be a part-time psychologist, too. a lot of people are nervous right now, aren't we?
There's a lot more to managing money than I ever thought. I've been doing this for almost 20 years, and there's a lot more to it about emotional and behavioral reactions than there is about just the numbers. So, yes. Typically, whenever there's a lot of volatility and it's in the news and there's an absence of another big story other than the stock market going up or down 200 points on a given day, that does tend to get people thinking quite a bit about their personal situation and how the broader economic factors might affect them. So, yes, we are in a state of heightened alert right now.
Yeah. So I've been posing this question. What does this latest Fed interest rate cut mean for our wallets? Does it mean anything?
Well, one of the reasons that On Your Money enjoyed the relative success that it did is that we never mentioned the term Federal Reserve or interest rates or anything like that. But basically what the Federal Reserve is trying to do is help offset the losses that we are likely to feel or that we felt in the real estate industry over the last several months and get that going to offset. You know, a lot of people bemoan the fact that, you know, housing prices were too high or there was too much focus on real estate. Well, real estate, for better or for worse, was the lion's share of the growth that we've had in the economy over the last few years. And so it's bound that there's going to be some pullback from that. We're experiencing that right now. And the question is, how bad is it going to be, and how long is it going to last?
We will check weather, and then we will go right to the phones to take your questions for Kevin McKinley. He is vice president and financial advisor with Robert W. Baird and Company in Eau Claire, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 16 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, December the 13th. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. The holidays are supposed to be happy days, but sometimes family situations are complicated by divorce and remarriage. Ben's guest after 5 offers suggestions for celebrating the holidays as a blended family. So tune in for that after 5 this afternoon. We're talking about our money and the action this week by the Federal Reserve lowering interest rates for the third time in 3 months, wondering what that means for us. We'll talk with Kevin McKinley, our guest this hour, about some money moves we might want to consider and some we might want to put off in light of the state of the economy right now. But first, let's go to the phone, since so many of you have questions. Zach in Green Bay is our first caller. Hi, Zach. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have a two-part question. The first one is, whenever the feds lower the interest rate, as it is reported in the mainstream media, it seems to be a panacea in that, they're going to lower the rate, that's just going to solve everything. I'm wondering, is there a limit to how low rates can lower rates, and are there negative possible impacts of that over time? And the second question is, in looking on the options in my 401k program, I have heard things that there is a fear that the dollar may decrease significantly yet in the coming year, and among my 401k options, the only one that appears to be a possible solution to the dollar declining further would be the one that invests in foreign equity, foreign stocks and bonds, etc. And is that a good idea?
Mm-hmm. Those are incredibly insightful and well-reasoned questions, especially for 7:20 in the morning here. So Zach's been up for a while. Well, first of all, how low can interest rates go? Is it a panacea? No, it's not a panacea. It's the best thing that can be done to stem a slackening economy, especially quickly. And it's much like we're driving a car here, and it seems that the car is slowing down, and so the Fed funds rate acts as the accelerator, putting a little foot on the gas to try to keep moving in the same direction, and of course trying to maintain that momentum that we've had carrying over from other sectors of the economy. Yes, there's definitely a negative aspect to that as well. If there's too much economic activity or interest rates are too low, it can encourage speculation, which we've seen some of that in every asset bubble over the last several hundred years. And it also can contribute to inflation. If there's too many dollars out there floating around, that of course diminishes the value of the inflation, which then does tie into your next question cleverly. Mm-hmm. Is that the part of the reason the international funds have done so well is because a lot of those securities come back to us denominated in dollars. And international funds in general, this is being very broad, of course, but in the past, let's say 12 months or so, actually haven't risen that much on their own. But because the dollar has dropped so much, they're worth a lot more dollars, which to those of us in the U.S. Appears to be a huge gain. And in dollars, it is. But of course, the dollar is worthless. That's part of the reason that let me make that very clear, that the dollar is worth less. Not the dollar is worthless. And that may continue, Zach, in the future, but it has already dropped quite a bit. And a lot of times what goes around comes around, and this appears to be a lower point in the cycle. Some people are saying that the dollar could be higher a year from now. And if that's the case, international funds might not do as well relative to other parts of your portfolio. I'd be more concerned about the broader mix of it rather than just loading it all up into international funds.
Well, along those lines, email from John in Milwaukee, who thinks that this cut will cause inflation, which is an invisible tax on people who have saved money in the past. And these interest rate cuts will make the U.S. dollar less desirable by foreign investors. And then he goes on to say probably a lot of what you just said. But is so do you agree with that?
To a certain extent, yes, but it's a case of how dangerous is the inflation and to what extent it is. You know, inflation really matters most to the individual as to what you plan to purchase in the future. The CPI index is a broad representation of goods and services out there, but it doesn't match everyone else's future goals. And so that's true. If dollars are becoming more prevalent, people who have saved money and are trying to use those savings to buy things in the future, their dollars aren't going to go as far. So that is a concern for people, whether they're retired or they're saving for college or something like that down the road.
Yeah. Lynn in Madison is with us now. Hi, Lynn. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity. I hope the On Your Money program isn't going to be gone for long. We all depend on it for a lot of important information.
Personally, that's a lot of pressure, Lynn. I can't handle that kind of pressure, okay?
I think you've handled it with great grace. I'll tell you
how. Oh, well, thank you.
A personal concern, a callable CD earning at a nice higher rate of 6.3% has to be replaced now. And I'm looking for a continuation of that income stream, and I'm not sure where to go. Bond funds, I'm a very risk-averse person, so I'm a little bit concerned about where to put this money and still try to maintain that income stream.
Okay, so you had a certificate of deposit that you purchased, and it probably gave you a little higher yield because it was callable, meaning that the issuer had the right within certain parameters to come back to you in and say, hey, here's your principal back. Do with it what you wish, but we're not going to pay you 6% and whatever anymore, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And you're right to be wary of bond funds. Bond funds are fine. They're great ways to get relatively conservative sources of fixed income, depending on the type of bond fund. But bond funds, you don't know exactly what is in that portfolio. And in the last few weeks and months, a lot of people have been looking at things that they thought were very conservative investments, whether it was bonds they held on their bonds they held on their own or a bond fund, and wondering just what is in there and how bad any type of fallout of the mortgage problems or the broader debt structures might affect those bond funds. So I certainly don't mind certificates of deposit. And if you think interest rates are going to go down, if people think the economy is going to slow down further here and interest rates are going to go down, a regular fixed rate certificate of deposit could be a great investment depending on your particular goals. And you can get 4% to 5% depending on the institution and the maturity, just as long as you keep everything FDIC insured. That's very important. So if you're concerned about income and safety, a certificate of deposit, especially in the shorter term, could be a great place.
And you don't see any other ways to replace that rate of interest at this point?
Nothing at that high. You probably took that out a few years ago, I'm guessing, correct?
Well, actually, only about 18 months.
Okay, well, 18 months ago, rates were higher at that point, and there aren't any. Even the callable CDs right now are much closer to 5% to 5.5%, and so rates just have dropped down on those. And if you need a little bit extra yield and you're comfortable with the call provisions of a CD, that's a fine investment. But if you say no, I don't want this to happen again, if interest rates drop further in the future, then I would go with a regular fixed income certificate of deposit.
Thank you very much, Lynn, for the call. Laverne in Monroe is next. Hi, Laverne.
Good morning, Joy. Great program. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you like it, Laverne.
Good morning, Kevin.
How are you, Laverne?
I believe in the last day or so, the Federal Reserve has put another $40 billion in to the banking system to save it. And these hedge fund dealers, the big banks are in them, and they're also using these pretty well worthless derivatives. Now, Senator Hillary Clinton and Senator Obama thinks the hedge fund dealers should be taxed because we're losing a lot of Federal Reserve money, not Federal Reserve, federal income money. And do you think the hedge fund dealers should be taxed? Because a lot of them go off from Bermuda and stuff.
They're very intelligent people, generally, who are at least shrewd and hardworking, and they have many people, whether you're making $10,000 a year or $10 million a year, are trying to figure out to pay the least taxes possible, and that's what they've done in this case. I'm not sure that that's going to solve a lot of problems in the economy mm-hmm. by taxing them. It sure, there's lots of different tax structures. The tax code is 55,000 pages long right now, and the reason it is because many of the changes are targeted or they're politically driven from one side or the other to say, look, we don't think that these particular people should be getting the breaks that they're getting, or we think that this party should be getting the breaks. So we might see something like that. I'm not sure that that is going to fix things or solve a lot of problems. Now, when you're talking about the liquidity, I don't. It certainly might have helped some people who had money in Wall Street and who are trading right now. But the Federal Reserve and Chairman Bernanke, they all have an interest in keeping these big banks healthy because the American system needs this liquidity in the system. If they were to go away, it would be a very painful situation. So while they certainly don't want to give them always a free ride, they do want to make sure that they're around to keep the flow of money moving, let us borrow money to buy houses and go to college and start businesses and things like that.
Yeah. Kevin, is this the mortgage meltdown and all the foreclosures and this problem that's hurting the economy nationally, is that happening or hurting Wisconsin directly as much as the rest of the country?
It's hurting people in Wisconsin, and there is some ancillary issues with it. Wisconsin did not have the dramatic rise in real estate prices generally that some of the other areas of the country, especially coastal areas, had. Part of that is because we have a lot of open space here, and the places that had the biggest rise, there was usually a huge demand for a very small supply of land or real estate. And in Wisconsin, we didn't have that monstrous demand because it was easily dissipated throughout the state because, you know, if you didn't like the price of this particular house, you could drive 5 minutes and mm-hmm. buy a lot and build another house for it. So there was a little more competitive. We didn't have that huge rise. It's less likely that we'll have a huge fall that some of the coastal areas or some of the more major metropolitan areas will have. But no, there's certainly people who are experiencing the effects of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. An email from Ginger in Madison. We're in our late 30s and have a lot of money in our house, and we're being told it would be smart to take some of that money out by refinancing in order to start saving for retirement. Is that a good move?
Generally, no. I do not think that that is a good idea to tap into your home equity to start saving for your retirement, and especially because it's a case of saying, would I stop paying down on the house if I were paying extra on it and redirect that money towards the retirement plan? Yes, that might be a better idea. But actually drawing into the home equity to save for retirement is typically not a very good idea, because let's say we're kind of at the peak of an economic cycle and the stock market right now. I'm not sure if that's true. We won't know until I come back on in 2 years and I can hark back to my accurate predictions. But if that indeed is the case, and you tap a bunch of equity in your home and put it into a retirement fund, you might find the money in the retirement fund going down over the short term while the value of your house has dissipated after you've taken that equity out of it. So no, if someone said, I have a lot of equity in my home, I want to start saving for retirement, I wouldn't tap the equity. I would just start saving a higher rate on the retirement accounts.
We're going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about our money and get the advice of financial advisor Kevin McKinley. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Thursday, December the 13th. Well, the Fed has cut interest rates for the third time in 3 months this week. And we will continue to talk for this rest of this hour with Kevin McKinley about the state of the economy and its effect on our money. Kevin McKinley is a vice president and financial advisor for and with Robert W. Baird in Eau Claire. He is also the author of Make Your Kid a Millionaire. He's also on the Governor's Council on Financial Literacy. And he is also the host of the show Kevin McKinley on Your Money, which continues to air for the next couple of weeks in December and then starting in January. next January, will be going on hiatus. And Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock, we will hear a repeat of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me until we can figure out what to do. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. The numbers you can call if you have a question about your personal financial situation that you'd like to ask Kevin. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. Kevin, the email from Ginger in Madison also had this, which is I'd like to pose to you. She says, our financial advisor says putting extra payments, house payments, toward our mortgage is not a smart move because we could do better investing that extra payment in some sort of IRA. Do you agree?
It depends. It depends on what the interest rate is of the mortgage. If it's 9%, I would guess that most financial advisors would not be willing to guarantee that type of rate of return going forward. However, there is a typically a tax deduction for contributions to a retirement plan. And there are also some issues. People feel like they have, a previous caller had felt like she had a lot of equity in her home and wanted to start using some of that for retirement. Well, if you feel like that too, again, diversifying away from all that home equity into something that's more liquid and is specifically designed to provide for you in retirement is generally a good idea. Now, in terms of making extra payments, we've run the numbers on the show for different callers several times, and after taking into account the interest rate, prospective return, tax deductions, future taxes, all that type of thing, it boils down to what makes you feel good. If you sleep better at night because you have a home that is mortgage-free, then that's the right thing to do.
Tom in Star Prairie is with us now. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We're in a situation where we have an existing house, and we're building a new house. We actually, our house is in Stillwater, Minnesota, and we're building in Star Prairie. We have tapped into our home equity about $60,000 on the existing house to help pay to build a new one. And the question, first question is, how is the federal funds rate related to our, I think our rate we're paying on the home equity is prime plus two. And that, I think they're tied together, but I don't know. And the second question is, paying off that home equity line because I'm debt averse. Somebody suggested maybe borrowing on the 401k that I have, and then I pay it back. I think you can borrow in some increments, and you pay back yourself at a at an interest rate. Is that a good idea?
Tom, do you, once the home in Star Prairie is finished, do you plan on selling the other house in Stillwater, or are you just going to, is this just the beginning of a real estate empire up and down the St. Croix River?
No, we're going to sell. We're empty nesters, and we're building downsizing, I guess.
Okay. The first part about your question about will the drop in interest rates help the interest rate you are paying on the home equity loan, right?
Yeah.
They're generally they move together, but they're not specifically lockstepped. And so while over time that may trend downward, it's not necessarily so. And this is a pretty crazy time for debt for both personally and for the country and the world, because there's a lot of uncertainty over there of these billions of dollars of loans that were repackaged and resold to investors, large and small, as to just what is in those packages and what they're worth and what's going to happen to them. And so you find some institutions not adhering to the normal practice of business that they might have done even 3 years ago, because they might say, look, if we're going to keep this money outstanding, we still need a higher rate than what we would normally do in light of the current Fed funds rate. So it does generally trend in the same direction, but not necessarily so, and not in a lockstep manner. The second thing is, I would highly recommend that you do not borrow against your 401k to pay off the home equity loan. And the reason being is that, yes, you can borrow against a 401k if your employer allows it, if the plan allows it. The problem is, Tom, is that if you lose your, you're still employed, correct?
Yes.
Okay. If you lose that job, generally you have to pay that loan off right away. And it puts you in a liquidity crunch because you have to go out and try to find some money to pay off that loan. And I don't think it's a good situation. If you need that to make it work, you've probably pushed it a little too far in your personal situation. You need to figure out a way to scale back. I'd rather have you figure out the carrying costs of trying to build one home while you're living in and selling another one. And, you know, that's probably a few hundred dollars a month, I would guess, that it's costing you in net interest. And that's probably a better way to do it than tapping into your 401k. I'm not saying you should never, ever do that, but only in an emergency. And it doesn't sound like this is an emergency. It sounds like it's something you're kind of leaning towards instead.
Right. Yeah, I'm just trying to think if I can make better financial decisions. Maybe that was one, but it sounds like it isn't. So.
No, and that brings up a good point. One of the mistakes that people make, especially in times of volatility and uncertainty, which, again, are only going to continue for the foreseeable future, is that they tend to want to get out of debt quickly or pay off their debt quickly. And that's a great idea over the long term, especially for people that have high interest debt like car loans or credit cards or things like that, and they have double-digit interest rates. The problem, though, is if you use all of your cash to pay down that debt and then a bigger emergency strikes, it's tough to figure out where you're going to get the cash to pay for that emergency. And if you just kind of slowly pay things off and keep kind of the wolves away from the door, you have a lot more flexibility than if you were to pay everything off by tapping into your retirement plan or by using cash on hand. I'd rather have you right over, you know, over a few months or even a year or so. It's going to cost you in the form of higher interest rates and probably higher than what you're making on the 401k. But you by eliminating that home equity loan right now, you may put yourself in a liquidity crunch that's much worse than that few hundred dollars a month you're probably losing in net interest.
Yeah, Tom, thanks and good luck. Kevin, what are some money moves that people should consider making right now?
Well, definitely, especially in the holidays coming up here, try not to take on any new high interest debt, especially unsecured debt like credit cards, car loans, and things like that. If you have the cash to pay for something, you can afford it. And if you don't have the cash and you have to borrow the money to do it, it's probably not a good idea to do it, especially right now. If you do have investments and you have especially a retirement plan, look at those investments and say, what was the worst year this investment ever had over the last 10 years? Or can I handle, if all my money in my retirement plan is in stocks, if this were to drop 20% in value, how would I feel? If I'm 40 years old and I have a long time to save for retirement, and then retirement's going to last 20 years, heck, you've got a 40-year window there. It's not that big of a deal for a 20% drop. And if you're going to be buying more shares down the road, that's actually beneficial. But if you're on the cusp of retirement or you're saving for something that you're going to be needing right now, a 20% drop could really hurt you. One thing, and I'm glad the subject of home equity has come up quite a bit here. We've harped on this on the radio show quite a bit. I'm a strong proponent that everyone who has home equity should have a home equity line of credit established, and they should do it when they don't need it, because when they actually need to tap into it, it's much harder to get. One of the things that we feared a year and a half ago was that lending standards would get tighter, and people who would normally qualify for a home equity line of credit weren't able to get one. Now, that said, I still only want people to tap that in an emergency, and, you know, a new plasma TV or a trip to Arizona to see the Packers in the Super Bowl does technically not count as
an
emergency.
Come on, Kevin.
They go every three or 4 years. They'll go again in 2012.
We have a weather break. The home equity, you establish this. It doesn't mean you're taking on any more debt.
That's right. Yeah. And generally, if you have it established, and then if you do have to tap into it, as long as you make the required interest payments, it can't be taken away from you.
Yeah. And what does it mean when someone like me has heard you say that many, many times and hasn't done it yet?
I would get off the air right now and call your local bank or credit union and get going on it, because, like I said, when you need it, you cannot get it. But when you have it, it provides you again with one other tool to keep the wolves away from the door while you get your situation straight.
Kevin McKinley, our guest, he is vice president and financial advisor at Robert W. Baird & Company in Eau Claire. He's also host of Wisconsin Public Radio's On Your Money. Heard through December at 7 o'clock on Sunday mornings. Then going on a little bit of a vacation, a hiatus, in the beginning of the year. Kevin McKinley will answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Thursday, December the 13th. Coming up after 8, I'll talk with the author of Power to Save the World, The Truth About Nuclear Energy. That's coming up after 8. Back to the phones for Kevin McKinley, and our next caller is Mike in Whitehall. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a question regarding a 401k fund that I have vested with a prior employer. I just currently have it sitting in a money market mutual fund for stability. I've been looking at moving it and talking with various investment counselors, and one suggestion I've had is that I move it into a variable annuity. The variable annuity would have a 6% guaranteed income return on it, not a rate of return, but an income return. However, as I looked at it, the carrying cost on that annuity is about 3%. Because it would be in an annuity with subaccounts, the institutional cost is going to be somewhere in that 1.4 to 1.5%, and then the insurance company has a 1.5 to 1.6% charge. I'm curious as to whether I might not be better off to put the money into mutual funds on a blended or balanced fund, which has about a 9% return on the historic 10-year average. And then as I get closer to retirement 10 years from now, take a look at moving it into the variable annuity to have the guaranteed income stream during retirement. And I'm just wondering what your guest has to think on that.
Yeah, what do you think, Kevin?
It's an excellent question, and it brings up all the great and terrible things about variable annuities, in that variable annuities are typically investment accounts that are in the shell of kind of an insurance product. And many times variable annuities will offer features like the 6% income. Now, what that means is that when the money is withdrawn, finally, there's a 6% base guarantee. It's very complicated, but it's a benefit to the variable annuity that can't be found typically with a mutual fund. The bad news, though, is exactly what Mike has brought up, is that variable annuities typically are more expensive than a mutual fund alternative. And the question is not, are they good, are they bad? It's if the higher expenses are worth the added features. In your case, from what it sounds like right now, Mike, that might not be the case. Without getting too deep into your situation, it's hard to say. But you are exactly right to look at the expense ratios to say if, a Mercedes is $50,000 and a Honda Accord is $30,000. Some people find the $20,000 difference to be worth it for them, and other people say, I can't imagine paying that extra price for that. There's absolutely, a car is a car. And so you've done the exact right thing. I can't say if it's if the mutual fund is better. I would caution you to say, just because the last 10 years a balanced fund has done 9%, they'll tell you in either big or small print, past performance is no guarantee of future results. And that 9%, I sure hope it makes that over the next 10 years, but I wouldn't count on it and I wouldn't bet on it. I'd look for something in much closer in the mid-single digits over the next 10 years and be happy if it's more than that. But I feel from what little I hear in your situation, Mike, you're leaning in the right direction, and you've done a good job of analyzing the costs and the benefits of that alternative.
Way to go, Mike. Patricia in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. At the beginning of the month, Treasury Direct announced that beginning January 1st, 2008, that they are limiting the amount of purchasing EE and I bonds from $30,000 to $5,000 per Social Security number. And their reason being, the purpose of the program is to benefit small investors, and I don't quite understand that, because even with a $30,000 limit, that did not prevent small investors from purchasing them. And I was wondering what your opinion was.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Patricia, because that is something that was kind of under the radar. It didn't get a lot of attention, but I thought it was a very dramatic move to get money out of savings bonds and into some other type of investment. Now, there are other suitable similar investments, but savings bonds have some unique features that are a part of them that you can't find in other places. And you can go to savingsbonds.gov, I think, to find out what some of those features are. But I think the good news is that you can find other alternatives, whether they be actual treasury bonds or, again, we talked about certificates of deposit. But I was a little puzzled by that, too. And the explanation, I must not be smart enough to grasp what's going on with it, because it didn't seem to cover all of the aspects of that move, and it didn't receive a ton of fanfare or consideration. So I was a little puzzled by that myself.
Thanks, Patricia, for the call. Aaron in Manitowoc. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I was wondering, my girlfriend and I are looking at remodeling our house, and I heard you say something about ahead of time getting a loan or something, or I didn't quite
a home
understand.
Equity line of credit?
Yeah. What is that actually, what are you actually doing then?
Yeah, you're just giving...
Go ahead, sorry.
You're giving yourself a window so that if the bank says, all right, Aaron, you have a $25,000 kind of line of credit that you can tap as you see fit, and you generally have to pay little or nothing to keep it open. If you do tap it, you have to generally pay the interest cost for it. So let's say the interest is 8% and you draw $10,000 on your home equity line of credit, then you generally have to pay 8% interest per year on that $10,000, and you generally only have to pay the interest, and there's typically some type of structure where you, in say 5 years, you have to either refinance or pay it all off or something like that. In your situation, you own the home, I take it?
Right.
Okay. Your situation, you might be better off with a home equity loan. That's a fixed amount that also typically has a fixed interest rate as well. And they say to you, okay, Aaron, here's $25,000. Start paying us back both principal and interest the moment you take this. But it's a fixed rate, so you don't have to worry about rates jumping up and down like they do with a home equity line of credit.
Oh, okay. I actually had another question about, I just recently got into my 401k at work. Mm-hmm. And I'm only 29, and I was just wondering, what is a better rate to go? I wasn't sure if I should go with like they have different categories of
sure.
how hard you want to invest into. And
right.
what's probably one of the better categories to go into?
In terms of what kind of risk?
Risk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Typically, in your case, Aaron, unless you plan to retire in the next couple of years, you have 30 years of contributions to this plan probably, and then another 20 years of retirement. So this is a 50-year proposition for you. So you can not only handle a drop in the value, but it's good news because you're going to be contributing to it over the next 30 years at least. That said, you only can stomach so much loss, and not everybody can handle that 20 or 30% drop in the value of their account, no matter what their age is or what their financial situation is. But the higher growth you want to get, the more aggressive you're going to be. And typically, it's going to be more volatile, it's going to be more unpredictable, and when things go bad, they're going to go much worse than a conservative one. That's the price you pay for generally getting a higher rate of return over the long term. So you want to look at the scale of those offerings and probably, in your situation, tip a little bit more towards the higher growth options.
Boy, we have a 29-year-old listening to us, Kevin. Isn't that good?
Yeah, somebody dramatically drawing down the median age of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm just kidding. We only have a couple of minutes left to go. This is a good time to consider buying that home that we want then?
Absolutely. This is an interesting situation because prices have dropped on homes generally, but interest rates are still low. And it's typically interest rates are what determine the price of a home, because people just, they look at the mortgage payment and they say,
that's the payment I can afford, therefore that's the home I'm going to get. So people who have a good credit, it could be a very good time for them to look at a home, especially this time of the year, because people are taking their homes off the market. It's generally a buyer's market. One thing I would tell people to do, though, is get your FICO score, F-I-C-O. That's your credit score that you can get at myfico.com. Take a look at that, because that's what's going to determine the type of rates you get on a mortgage if you do buy a new home.
Kevin, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much for being with us, and happy holidays.
Same to you, Joy. Thank you very much.
Kevin McKinley is Vice President and Financial Advisor with Robert W. Baird & Company in Eau Claire. He is the author of Make Your Kid a Millionaire. He is on the Governor's Council on Financial Literacy. He's a weekly columnist for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. And for the rest of this month, he is the host of Wisconsin Public Radio's On Kevin McKinley on Your Money, which is heard Sunday mornings at 7. The program will be going on hiatus beginning in January, but I'm sure we will hear from Kevin again. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. By the way, tomorrow during this hour, the 7 to 8 o'clock hour, we will be joined by UW-Madison Professor Alfred McCoy, and we will hear a different perspective on the CIA tapes and the waterboarding that we talked about yesterday. So a different perspective on that tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.